I firmly believe that we deserve, period.
I just feel like it's important to keep saying that out loud, that this is us learning in public.
The foundation of how to not have trash politics is really just relationships, right?
So if you're not aware of how powerful you are, then how can you be using your power to bring others up?
We're giving you collective liberation. We're giving you personal healing. We're giving you millennial auntie with a mic.
You're listening to Scene, the podcast.
You are one of my closest friends and have been for years now.
Oh, I'm so surprised. I didn't know.
Are you free of me? I don't tell you enough. And, you know, we get a chance to really go deep on topics in this setting, you know, in a way that it's unique, definitely, in my life. And it gives me the chance to know you and tell you things about myself in this very special way, which is why it always really surprises me when every now and then we come up to a topic and I realize, oh, we've never talked about this before.
Yeah, often that happens, right?
Yeah, well, once in a while. I mean, I feel like less and less, which makes sense, but when it does happen, yeah, I must be forgetting, like, how is it possible that I don't already know this about you? Even though, I mean, you know, we lived many, many, many years before we ever met each other, so it does make sense, but yes, still.
There was a life before Lala and Nick. Nick and Lala.
There was. I much prefer this life.
Me too. I was just going to say, yes. I'm not saying that the life before, I'm not like reminiscing like, whoa, the good old times, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Not like when we talk about the other before times, like the before pandemic times.
Know, BC, before COVID,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yes. Not, yeah. Not. This is a different kind of before times that is not as good.
Would that be called BS, like before scene? Sorry, continue. Give us what yes. are we talking about today?
That girl? Should be a new running joke on the podcast. Yeah, so I'm excited that we get to talk about something so new today. And the question is, what does your period mean to you? And that's a really big question, so I'm not gonna ask it all at the same time. I was thinking maybe we could just take it way back and sort of compare notes about our early years of our periods and kind of like track our journeys sort of alongside each other.
Yeah.
First of all, wait.
Yes.
How do you feel about talking about this on the podcast? Do you feel uncomfortable at all? Or are you perfectly comfortable with it? Are there mixed feelings?
I'm open. Like, I feel comfortable. I mean, I know that there is probably going to be parts of me that like hesitates or tries to like find words to describe things. Because I've never talked about my period publicly and that's fine, but I'm like really excited for us to talk about like our different experiences and see where they intersect or where they don't and kind of, yeah, I'm excited about this conversation.
Okay, yes. Great. Yeah. I'm also excited about it. It feels kind of odd, I guess. It's intimate in a different way.
Right.
Like we talk about very emotional topics and very intimate things in that regard, but we don't talk usually about our bodies on that really like intimate level. True. I mean, a little bit with, you know, chronic illness, I've talked a little bit, but not really. So it feels a little bit strange.
Yes.
And there probably is a little bit of that like stigma of like, oh, you're not supposed to talk about it, especially sort of in mixed company, knowing that there's people who listen to the podcast who don't have uteruses and have never menstruated.
Totally.
And all of that.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But I'm very excited to just like tear that down.
Yeah, me too.
And yeah, maybe unlearn a little bit of that conditioning. So now I'm ready to ask you, what did your period mean to you when you first got it? And how old were you when you first got it?
I was 11. And it was on Halloween.
Wow.
It was on Halloween, so yeah, Scorpio rising, girl, it's meant to be. When you think about it, it's like, yeah, that bitch would get a fucking period, her first period on fucking Halloween. It was, I was like excited, I guess, because my older sister had already had her period, and like in our family, it was like there were just all the girls, right? It was like me and Elle and Char, and like I don't. Joe was not yet born, actually. So Joe wasn't around yet. And I was just excited to kind of like be part of like what I understood was like what womanhood was, or on this like path to womanhood. Like, obviously, caveat, this is Nick as an 11-year-old living in a world where, you know, my idea of gender is like you're a woman, you're a man, you're a girl, you're a boy. So I want to just like acknowledge that as I'm talking about how I used to feel or how I felt. I was excited. And I remember, so my mom, I told my mom, Avi, and she was like, okay, great. Congratulations. Like, she, you know, she was like the whole time. I remember when my older sister would like go and get, like pads and stuff. Like, that was still the time when you were anxious about people seeing that you had like pads or tampons, and you would see that, that kind of like imagery in any kind of, teen, like, you know, television show where it's like, oh my God, ew, periods, or like, I'm on my cycle, or like, I'm on my time, or whatever. But I was like, I'm about this time. I want to be on the cycles. Give me all that shit. And I'm, my mom, cause she's just like, whatever, periods are periods. She hands me, she was like, here's some tampons. And I was like, I don't know what to do with them. And my mom, I will say this, like, looking back, who knows, like how it was, what it was for her, but she helped me put my first tampon in, where she just sat there and coached me. And she was like, this is what you need to do. Like, this is the positioning. I remember putting it in and being like, I'm pretty sure that I ended up like hitting, like, just like, I put it against my like urethra and was just like, no, this hurts. Like, this isn't it. Like, it just was like, how is this thing supposed to go inside little me? Like, I was just like, this is insane. Like, because at that point I hadn't, you know, there had been no real conversations about like anatomy. So I was like, I don't understand where this is supposed to go. I thought it was supposed to go in my little pee hole. I was like, no, but don't go in there. And she was like, no, there's like, you have a vagina, like it goes there. And I remember putting it in and waddling around the house with a tampon and being like, if this is what this shit's about, if I have to waddle for the rest of my life, I'll do it. Like, I was like, I'm part of the team. Like, I accepted it. And it wasn't until much, 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 like, honestly, so much later, because I remember trying a tampon when I was 11. And then I was like, no, I want to do pads. Mom was like, yeah, cool. Here's pads. Do pads instead. Maxi pads. All the pads, you know. And it wasn't until I got into high school where it was like all the conversations about, you know, I'm going to stand up right now. Am I leaking? Like, check me. Like, and you know, the conversations that a lot of boys were having when girls would, like, you could tell that somebody was on their period. You could see the pad outline, you know, if somebody was wearing like form fitting clothes or whatever, or if somebody actually was leaking, you could see the blood. So there was like a lot of shame, but that came later. Initially it was just a lot of excitement, a lot of like openness, and just like a sense of like, I'm part of the club. So yeah, that was me at the beginning.
Yeah, I definitely relate. I got mine when I was 12, and I had that same kind of excitement. You know, my older sisters had theirs already, and some of my friends at school, and it was sort of this like initiation. And
I love it, girl.
Yeah, I had like really anticipated it, and I think it was one of those things similar to like, when are you going to have your first kiss? Or when are you going? It was like, you know, not wanting to be the last one.
Yes.
And
yes,
almost thinking like the people who did it sooner were like cooler because they were like more kind of developed. Or, yeah, exactly. So there was definitely that excitement. And then I had the opposite, like started with pads. I'm very impressed that you figured out, well, you had help, but that you you went for tampons at the very beginning, because I think it, for me, it was the opposite. It was like at least, well, I don't know how long it was, but it was some amount of time with pads, and moved up to tampons. And yeah, I remember it just triggered a memory and thought about this.
Core memory
so
unlocked right now.
Yeah. When you talked about, you know, not wanting anyone to see you with period products.
Totally.
And I remember they had those tampons that like were mini, like Yeah. They were like mini sort of, so they'd fit in the palm of your hand so that people would be able to see it.
Do you remember they had little like pouches? They actually created, I think Playtex created little pouches that were like discreet, like they were supposed to be discreet so you could like slip them into,
okay,
like, at the palm of your hand. There was so much like, you know, merch around hiding your period. It's insane. Like, it's actually kind of wild.
Truly. Yeah, yeah, truly. But another thing that I remember for me is that quite early on, it was always really, as far as I can remember, painful.
Yeah.
So I had a prescription for naproxen throughout all of high school. And I think probably got it in middle school. This was before it was over the counter. Now it's sold over the counter as Aleve. But at the time, it was prescription only.
Right.
So I can remember like really bad cramps going back all the way that far. Did you have bad cramps?
I did. It was more like bloating. My bad cramps didn't start until a lot later. I think until like end of high school. Like, my periods just changed so many times. Like, there's iterations of it. But at the beginning, it was less crampy and just more like, I just didn't feel like myself. I didn't feel that great, but yeah.
Okay, so the symptoms weren't really that bad at first?
No, they weren't. Like, I think if I can honestly unlock this core memory of, like, you know, I recall a couple of times having, like, keeling over, like, really uncomfortable, like, discomfort. But for the most part, it wasn't, like, too much pain. There was still discomfort, I will say that. It wasn't, like, you know, this is painful and, like, hurting me. It was, like, it feels like I have a stomach ache. Like, it feels like a low-grade stomach ache. And that was sort of the norm for me. So maybe, like, maybe I'm normalizing the amount of discomfort that I was in.
Yeah.
But I guess I'm also pretty aware of how some people that I was friends with when I was like, you know, 11, 12, 13 had really bad cramps. And like, it seemed like it affected them so much more than it did me, mm-hmm, the pain piece. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is something I do really want to zero in and track, because it is so normalized that periods are very painful for a lot of people. And I think it's only in very recent years that conversations about endometriosis have started to become a bit more common. And it's more known that 1 in 10 people who menstruate have endometriosis, which is an extremely painful condition and is not normal. Mm-hmm. Where I think it's that the tissue, I am not a doctor. This might surprise everybody to learn. I'm just learning about this. So everything I say today is something that's like, I am at the beginning of kind of a learning,
right,
process.
Yes.
So please DM me and tell me what I'm wrong about. But I believe it's like the tissue that's supposed to be on the inside of your uterus also grows in other places outside of it. Yeah. And it can cause very severe pain as well as other problems as well. So there's that. But then there's also a lot of other things, I think, that can cause intense period pain that is not normal and doesn't need to just be lived with, but because, you know, the medical field is what it is, and there is so much stigma around periods as well, so, you know, a lot that stops us from even going to the doctor's office, and then once we get there, there's so much that gets in the way of us actually getting the attention that we
need,
should get, that we need. Totally. Exactly. So anyways, I do want to like zero in on that as one of the big themes of what we talk about today. So you did say that eventually your cramps did get really bad.
They got bad, and I think it was like the worst. The worst was when I was already on some kind of birth control.
That was the worst. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and that's the thing too that's interesting. I think a lot of the times the things that I've heard is birth control is supposed to make your period lighter, makes your cramps, you know, more manageable. Yeah. But they're like, not all bodies respond to,
totally,
you know, progesterone the same way. And our bodies are all doing different things. And so I never really had that experience. And maybe are we going to talk a little bit about sort of like what people give us to like, quote unquote, manage periods that are usually just like other medicines? Because I had a mom who, because I grew up in a very Christian household, she wasn't like, get on the pill by any shape or form. In fact, like I can tell you when I actually did get on the pill, is when I was dating my first boyfriend, and I was living on campus at UBC in undergrad, and I needed to go to the doctor or something, and she ended up finding out that I had a prescription that I needed to go pick up, and she was like, "Why? Do you need antibiotics? Like, are you okay?" And I was like, "It's not a big deal." And then I think in some capacity, I like hinted at that it was birth control. I would think I was about 20 or 19 years old at this time. Up until then, I had never taken any kind of birth control. I wasn't sexually active until I was 19, and my mom, she was driving me back to campus. So you imagine driving around like Pacific Spirit, like that, like a highway, right? And we're on that highway, and she like locks the doors in her car as if I'm gonna leave and like tuck and roll out. And she's like driving. So imagine my mom driving, and she's like, you know what the Bible says about premarital sex. You know what it says. But that being said, because she's a scientist, right? Like, she also is a science lady. So science Milka put her science hat on and was like, "But I'm also very proud of you for being practical and pragmatic and like, you know, make sure you're getting tested." Like, my mom has always been that like straddling both worlds kind of gal. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, like I started on like the oral pill, was on it for a bunch, and there was a lot of autonomy that I had and control that I had over my period that I'd never had before. There was this trick that people were doing where they would skip their sugar or like their, you know, placebo pills and just like go right through and not have a period. And I was like, let me do that shit so I can get some dick. Like, that was what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And I think I knew a lot of people that were doing the same thing as like a kind of, you know, a way to sort of like cheat the system or like cheat your body or whatever the fuck. And yeah, like my period got weirder and like more different. It was just it became more and more foreign, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Before I felt like something that was pretty routine and regular that I could count on. And it started to just like metamorphosize into something else that felt like, I don't know, like it was, while I had more control over when I was menstruating, like how heavy it was, the kind of pain that I was feeling, and then how I was feeling emotionally was also just kind of getting like all out of sorts when I was on the pill.
Wow. Yeah. That sounds really intense. And so were you able to consult with any doctors about that, or was it something you just felt like you couldn't talk about?
Oh,
maybe it didn't occur to you to take it to doctor. Yeah, you know what, though?
Let me tell you this. There was this clinic. There was a youth clinic that I loved. There was this black nurse practitioner. It was called Pine Free Clinic. And it was right on, 4th and I want to say, like, Alma. And everybody that I knew at UBC would be like, go to that clinic. Like, that's the best clinic. And the nurse practitioner, she would give, you know, she would do STI tests. She would prescribe birth control, and I never really had conversations with her about like the pain or anything, you know. It was like, can you just give me a prescription for birth control? Because everything else I felt like, this is just the way it is. Like, if I'm feeling fucked up about it, well, hormones are there, and your hormones are doing what hormones are doing, so like, don't overthink it. Like, it is what it is. I kind of just accepted that was the way that like periods were. Even though I was taking things that was actually like affecting my period, I still didn't click for me that like, oh, I should, if I'm feeling weird about my period or if I'm feeling like not myself, then I should be consulting with the doctor. I don't remember anyone ever asking like, how are your periods?
No, I don't remember anyone ever asking me that either. Yeah. And it's funny. So in those kind of years, I feel like we did a little bit of a flip here because, well, I actually went on the pill quite young because I had a lot of acne.
Yeah.
And it just was really like hard on my self-esteem. Yeah. And so it was suggested to me to start taking the pill to see if that would help, because it does for a lot of people. And it did help a lot. So I stayed on it for a long time. And so I was on it for years before I ever became sexually active. And it did help my periods. Like I did still take naproxen, I think, for them in high school, but it helped a lot. And then in those early years, like in university, I have very few memories of my period in undergrad. I definitely did the thing where I would skip periods as well. And it was really only about having sex. It had nothing to do with like the period itself usually.
Yeah. Can I pause there for a second and just like acknowledge the fact that that practice of skipping periods so that you have sex is really like people do it for all different reasons, but this reason is I feel pretty fucked up because it's like it's and not because like we're fucked up, but because it's like there's obviously a stigma around, you know, for me anyways, I felt like I can't have sex with dudes when I have my period because they're going to think that I'm like gross or they're going to be grossed out. Like that was what I, so anyways, I'm wondering if that resonates for you or if you felt differently or where you were at when it came to that.
Yes. And like, I totally agree with you. I felt that way too. And that was a part of it.
Yeah.
And I also just have never really felt very, I've never felt super well when I have my period. So it's also like, I've never really wanted to have sex, especially in the first couple days of my period because I'm sore and tender.
Yeah.
And just like my stomach's not very good. And like, it's just not a sexy time for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't think we can fully separate, so I can't say, oh, it's only because of that. And it's not because of stigma.
Yes.
I think it's both for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's fascinating for me to think about how my relationship with my period and how like, even the fear that others would know that I'm having my period and like, you know, sexual partners would know that that's like changed so much over time. I think maybe into adulthood and you, like after being on the pill for so long and my period being kind of like wonky, I got to a point where I was really cognizant of how I just did not feel like myself. Like I became all of a sudden suicidal.
Right.
And I was like, oh shit. Cause I remember that there was this birth control called Yaz, like YAZ. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And
there were a lot of people had that experience, I think.
Exactly. I wasn't on Yaz, but I remember being so attuned to like, oh, people like this, like birth control doesn't always mean like rainbows and sunshine. So like it just clued me into being more tuned into my body. And I think I was on Aless at that time. And I remember walking across just going for a walk and being like, I don't feel like myself. Like, I don't feel well. And I was like, I need to stop taking this pill. So I switched to something else.
Yeah. And good for you. Like, I feel like we aren't asked enough about these kinds of side effects. They're not taken seriously enough.
Right.
A lot of people will recommend the birth control as being sort of the treatment for especially early stages, I think, of endometriosis. I'm not sure about later stages, as well as just in general, painful periods.
Yeah.
And that's great for some people. And yeah, I was like a lucky person who had never really felt any negative side effects of the birth control pill. It just, you know, helped me not get pregnant and made my skin nicer. That was pretty much it.
Win-win, right?
Yeah. Win-win. Yeah, exactly. Never noticed any like emotional difference.
Right.
But so many people who have taken birth control have had that experience of being suicidal. And it's like, how can I say this? That is not an effective treatment for a painful period if it's making you suicidal, right?
Thank you.
That needs to be taken a lot more seriously.
Yeah. And like, even when I switched pills, I don't remember my doctor or wherever I was accessing birth control from. I don't remember them asking me like, why are you switching pills? Or like, go on this for X amount of time and we'll check in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of folks who end up taking birth control really do suffer in silence because like you just described, it's seen as like the panacea for like all things related to hormones in the bodies of people that have uteruses, like any kind of hormone imbalance, any kind of thing that's happening here, take the pill, like here's something that's going to placate. And maybe for some folks it really does help, but I got more curious over the years about the impact of like progesterone on my body and how I actually feel, like getting a bit more, not like I've done my own research, but to some extent I kind of had to start thinking about like, what am I putting in my body? So I don't know if we're going to move into a time where we can sort of speed up into today, like how our periods are now, but
yeah. How has it been in the more recent years?
Yeah. So like my journey after switching from Alas into like Monovril or some other kind of oral, was going and getting an IUD, and the IUD was really helpful for me. But then again, it also like, it was helpful because I didn't have to think about taking uphill. I didn't have to, mm-hmm. I wasn't like about like this time every single day I could forget about it. I did forget about it, you know. Soon around when I got my IUD, I got curious about not consumption, but like waste and just like how I might want to be thinking a bit more about the impact that my period is having on like the environment. And so I was curious about Diva cups and like menstrual cups. And so I got one, and for a long time I was like, this thing is so fucking weird. And I was scared to like use a menstrual cup when I had my IUD in, because I'm like, oh my God, there's too many things in my uterus. Like it's just, there's an IUD and there's a thing like, oh, it's just, this is going to be crowded.
I hope your Diva cup is not in your uterus, is she gonna for be the confused? Record.
I just didn't you're doing know. It wrong. I didn't. But yeah, you're no, right. I know. You are I'm doing it wrong. This is a PSA. If you, it is not supposed to be, I repeat, not supposed to be in your uterus. But yeah, like I just, I was curious, tried it, hated it. And it reminded me of like when I first put a tampon in, where I was like, oh my God, this is it. I don't want to do it. And then I started reading up about it, about different positions and how to put it in and seal it properly. Cause everyone that I had spoken to at that time, this is probably in 2016, was like, you use a what? Like you are putting something, you're like, aren't OB tampons enough? Like there's no applicator. You use your finger. Like, couldn't that work? And I'm like, but this is different. You like so reuse different. This thing, right? They're like, mm-hmm. ew, why would you want to do that? Girls, look at me. Look at us now. A lot of people are moving towards. So I just got to say, I put the girls on. I put the they, thems and the girls and all the peeps on. And the girl.
I don't want to steal your moment, but I started using a Diva cup in like 2008.
Oh, you're not going to do this to me on my own podcast.
Maybe I'm just outing myself as how much older than you I am. I'm old.
You know what? So at that time, we were both, you know, we started Diva Cups at the same time. Let's just say that. We could go with that. Anyways.
For the record, though, I'm not 8 years older than you. No, I just want to say that.
It's true. You're only 4 or 5 years older than me. You're born in 87, right?
Yeah, but at the
end of 87, and I'm at the beginning of 92, so I'm closer to 91.
So like 4 years.
So we're like, yeah. Let's just round down. anyways, boo. So I getting curious about the Diva cup, fiddling around with it, then figuring it out and being like, I have unlocked the eco femininity of myself. Like I was just so fucking excited about it. And I gotta say that like after I started using a Diva cup, I was just so much more inquisitive about like how much blood I was like, you know, how much blood was actually coming out of my body, what my blood was like, what that was, mm-hmm. what like, you know, I would notice when I would have more clots or when it was changing. And like, I was just paying more attention, and it wasn't something that repulsed me anymore. Cause for the longest time, especially in that period of time when I'm like, I just want to have sex, and I wasn't having sex with people who were like, let me put it this way. I was having sex with people who would say shit like, ew, shark week. Ew, you on your rag. It's rag time. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
So the taboo of it all, the yuck, yuck, yuck of it all was really present, and you can't help but internalize that. So by the time I was, you know, transitioning into using a menstrual cup, I was like just a lot more appreciative and maybe a little bit more like comfortable with menstruating, comfortable with blood. And also I have to say that it was like part of being in a relationship with a person who is like, he butchers things, he butchers animals, he hunts, is like, he's comfortable with blood. He's not like squeamish. He's not like, ew, that's gross. Like, it was just a very different, this partnership has also helped me be like okay and be accepting. Cause he's just like, obviously you have like, that's a natural thing for you to like, what, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a nothing, you know, as opposed to like the presence of like Ickville, it's like the absence of any of that. And it's just like, okay, cool. Like if you're not feeling up for, you know, us having sex, that's cool. But also if you were and you were on your first date, that's cool too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Which is like, I mean, it should be the norm. I feel like if you can't handle the idea or even the sight of menstruation or, you know, discussion of it, You shouldn't have sex with people who menstruate. You're not emotionally mature enough.
That is my personal opinion. She said what she said, really.
Yes. Yeah. But I had a similar experience with the Diva Cup, actually, that at first I was, it was very difficult. I was like, what is happening? And this is so gigantic. How is this supposed to work?
Yes.
And then it made me feel so much more comfortable with my body and with my period. And I felt a lot more sort of, yeah, in tune with it, because I was seeing, how, you know, how much blood there was and that kind of thing and on what days. And I felt a lot more connected to it. So I definitely kind of experienced a similar thing there. I, though, eventually stopped using it. Now I use period underwear, which I wish that had always been an option.
I will say that I use that too, but continue.
It's great.
Continue.
Yes. But I stopped because my pain got really bad. And I found that that made it worse. So the pain came back and actually got a lot worse. And I don't know if it had to do with, you know, me stopping taking the pill, because I wasn't having sex with men, and I just felt like I had been on the pill for like my entire life since I was like 13 or something. And I was just kind of curious about what my body would be like without it, and just thought, why take kind of something unnecessary? And I don't know if that had to do with it, because it didn't exactly coincide. But I do know that over the last like 5 years in particular, and then again, like very noticeably in the last 2 years, I would say, my periods have become very painful, to where the point where now they're debilitating.
Right.
And that's kind of put me in a new place in terms of, okay, how am I going to manage this? Because it's getting more and more unmanageable.
Yeah.
But we can kind of get back to that. What happened with you with pain? Did the pain sort of go away again, or get to a more just sort of mild state again after you stopped taking the pill? Or
so one thing that I want to just track back on that you mentioned is around just kind of asking yourself, like, I wonder what I'm like without being on the pill. Like, that's I had that similar question. I'm like, I really wonder what I'm like. Am I the same person? Like, I wanted to know how much the hormones were affecting me, because I didn't feel like myself. And even when I had the IUD, which is localized hormones, the pain was okay. Like, it would still be unmanageable. I got worse and worse pain over time. And I had my worst cramps when I had an IUD, which is very strange. And it was also one of those things that kind of, maybe it's, the word isn't placebo, but like, maybe it's like, because you are aware that something is like implanted into your body, that you're also just so much more attuned to like, there's something in here, and it's like I can feel it like twinging and like hurting, and it feels like my body is like trying to expel it. And actually that was the feeling that I remember when I first got the IUD in. It was like, I have never felt pain so specifically inside my body. Like, I didn't know, you know what, because like there's so many parts of your body that you're not really like actively sensing. Right. But this pain was just like, it was wild. Like, and yeah, the periods got lighter, the pain increased, but then the periods got weirder. It was like clots. It would not come. Then it would come. Then it would be, it was just very stop start. And then kind of back to what you were saying before about like, I wonder what it's like to be me off of anything. Like, you know, I wonder who she really is. So then I ended up getting my IUD removed last year, and I'm not on anything at all now. And which sounds like I'm trying to get pregnant. I'm not trying to get pregnant, but
there's other ways. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. But I just, I like my curiosity for, I wonder what I'm like, sans hormones, sans like anything besides like what I'm naturally producing myself, really just took me to a place where I was like, my time is up on my IUD. I don't want a new one. I know I don't want to get on the pill. I don't want a patch. And I was having conversations with like Nolan just about like, it takes two, right? Like, I can't be the one who is like bearing the brunt of what synthetic hormones might do to my body over time. so we gonna change this up and go back to as if we just first met and we're gonna be using condoms again. Isn't that exciting? You know? And it was like well received. Obviously, it wasn't a fight. It wasn't a big conversation. It was just like it was what it was. And he was like, yeah, of course. But when I got my IUD taken out, the physician, he was like, oh, do you want another one? And was like, oh, are you trying? And I was like, why are these the two questions going back to back? Like, can't you just be like, great.
Well, cool. And I think, you know, I'm glad that, again, Nolan had the right reaction. And this is why you're marrying him, is because he's wonderful and he's like has empathy for you.
Yeah.
But I just think it is so common and it's just, it's very infuriating that there is such a sort of double standard and a lack of empathy for certain people and a kind of over empathizing with others, that so often people who have uteruses do feel like we just have to put up with, it doesn't matter if hormonal birth control makes us suicidal or makes our cramps worse. Yeah. Or, you know, does whatever else, you know, or if you just don't want to have to take something every day or whatever it might be, that we still think that we should have to suffer through that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, men might experience slightly less sexual pleasure if they put on a condom.
Girl, when you started saying that, I almost got emotional because I feel so strongly about that double standard. And I feel so strongly about this idea that, like you just described, that like folks with uteruses have to suffer. I don't believe in that as like an inherent like, oh, you know, that same conversation I chalk it up to that bullshit of like beauty is pain or whatever. It's like, but why? Who said? Like, I don't agree with that. Just because, you know, by and large, the expectation is that people with uteruses and people that can get pregnant are over responsible, right? And it's like folks who do the impregnating are usually able to be like, peace. Like, you know, there is that like physiological difference in reality, but like there are also the social constructs that we've created to make it okay for folks with uteruses to have to endure that much pain without enough discourse around like, well, what if I don't want to do that anymore? Mm-hmm. Like, what if I want to change the way that you have relied on this thing going down. What if I want to add something different? And I think that that is such a, I thought I was going to be honest. Like I was nervous about having that conversation, obviously, like, and I'm saying this obviously to you because you know, Nolan, it's like, it wasn't really a conversation. He was like, yeah, sure. Whatever. Like you don't have to be on. I don't fucking like, don't do it then. Like if it sucks, like don't fucking do it, please. Like I don't, that's not a necessary, it wasn't like a big to do, but I was still nervous about that.
Yeah.
I still felt responsible for like potentially curtailing like the amount of pleasure or enjoyment that he would have. And I'm like, wow, like that's fucked up. That's fucked up.
It's so fucked up. And so, yeah, there's all this like cultural, you know, baggage there. And that baggage also exists in the medical profession. And so when I've gone to doctors and tried to say I've been having like debilitating pain where I like can't move and it's like I can't breathe and it's just so intense.
Wow.
I actually did have my GP order an ultrasound. This was like years ago. And then it came back quote unquote normal. And so then they were like, well, you're fine.
And that's there was the no response, right?
Exactly. There was no curiosity about it. And so then more recently when, you know, other like weird things have been happening with my period, like getting blood at other times, like throughout my cycle, and then increasing pain, I, you know, went back to the doctor and, you know, got all of the tests. So yesterday I went to see this gynecologist and talked to her about the results of the tests that she had ordered, more ultrasounds and blood work and things like that. And she also said that they were quote unquote normal, but I've had better luck with specialists than with GPs for every issue. I find GPs totally lacking in curiosity and empathy and interest most of the time.
And also can gatekeep, right? Like, it's if they lack that empathy or that interest, it's not like there's like a, but let's get down to the bottom. Let's somebody else get down to the bottom of it. It's like, well,
bye.
Take that naproxen, girl. You know what to do. You've been doing it your whole life.
Totally. Oh, you can't take that anymore? Oh, well, that's too bad, I guess. Just suffer then.
Can I ask, like, when was the height of the worst amount of pain? Are you in it right now? Have you ever experienced pain like this before?
I'm in the worst of it now. Like, and every period isn't, like, as bad as every other one.
Yeah.
But it's become where increasingly it's all of them that are excruciating, and it's just whether or not the sort of over-the-counter things that I'm able to take, because I also have other like medical issues that prevent me from sometimes being able to take all of the medications. So I have to kind of weigh things. But yeah, it's like, can that take the edge off enough to get through it? And like, I have fibromyalgia. Like, I know pain. I have tattoos. Like, it's not like I can't handle pain.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely gotten to the point where, like, you know, it's like, put the meds and the water by the bed so that, like, the second I open my eyes, or maybe during the night, depending.
It's right there.
It's like, I have to take it immediately, because if I get out of bed without it, it's like, I'm like doubled over. If I like, you know, miss a dose because I'm like doing something, then it's like, I can't, you know, I can't.
You
move,
have to catch it, you know, when it's like at its infancy.
Yeah. And then sometimes, like, depending on the period, sometimes like even like alternating between like Tylenol and ibuprofen so that you can take it more often, even that is like not enough sometimes. And yeah, it's just it's like totally unmanageable. And again, like, increasingly so. So it's like kind of like, okay, well, where is this going? And so yesterday, getting these results back, and she still said my tests were like, quote unquote, normal, although it's a little confusing because there was at least one abnormal result on the blood work. But she's like, oh, but that's fine. And I'm like, is it?
Did she tell you what the abnormality was, or did she say there's an abnormality?
She was like, oh, you could, you know, maybe that means your iron's a little low, but it's probably fine. Like, this other result is normal, even though it's like the lowest number in the, like, quote unquote, normal range. And I'm like, if it was 0.5 lower, would you say the same thing? I'm just curious, you know? So
yeah.
I don't know. Even though I really like her, and she has definitely listened to me more and taken me more seriously than GPs have, I'm still not going to just take her opinion necessarily as fact. Because she also said, well, you do have fibroids in your uterus, but they're too small to be causing pain, and like, fibroids can be normal, so there's nothing. And I'm like, okay. I mean, I definitely want a second opinion on that. But again, like, she didn't just then move on. She was like, but tell me about your periods, because I this isn't why I was seeing her. That could be maybe another episode. But so we hadn't talked about this before. And so I told her about my periods, and I told her how debilitating the pain was and how it's been getting worse, and how, you know, I've been getting spotting throughout my cycle and all of that. And so she said, okay, well, you know, you might have endometriosis. And she's like, that wouldn't show up on an ultrasound unless there, like, happened to be some of the tissue, whatever it's called, on your ovaries.
Okay.
Which sometimes there is, but often there isn't.
Sometimes it's, like, in, like, other places that is not even, right? Like,
yeah, it can be in, like, many other places that they wouldn't be able to see on an ultrasound.
Right.
So she's like, you might have endometriosis. Okay. And she's like, the only way to really diagnose that is to do I'm not going to pronounce it, but it's like a laparoscopy, which is like an exploratory surgery. And she said, we wouldn't really do that, though, unless it got to a particular
threshold of pain that you have to be.
I don't know exactly what the threshold would be. But basically what she said, I know at some point it would be necessary, but basically what she said is the treatment would be the same. So basically, at this point, like, with what you're experiencing now, we would treat it as if it is endometriosis, because those treatments are likely to help whether or not that is the actual problem.
Okay.
And so I'm, like, being discharged from her because the other thing I was seeing her for is not an issue anymore. Luckily, though, because she wouldn't have even ordered these tests again. It wasn't related to why I saw her. But when she told me, you know, that the thing I was actually seeing her for, and I'm really not trying to be cryptic, but we're just like at the end of the episode. So I don't want to like get into that whole thing, that it wasn't causing these symptoms. She said, okay, go back to your GP and tell them. And I said, okay, well, can you tell me some things that it might be? Because I know what's going to happen if I go back to my GP and they're going to say, oh, I'm sure you're fine then.
Yeah.
And so she kind of took pity on me and ordered these tests herself. So I'm very glad that instead of going back to my GP, I actually have already found a naturopath who specializes in all of this.
Oh, I'm so
glad. I've already talked to her. Yeah. And she said, you talked to her before Monday. So she's like, okay, well, when you get those test results, if they tell you that they're normal, that's fine. Just get a copy of them, because even if they are normal, and often what like Western doctors say is normal is not what other types of practitioners would say is normal, because I think other types of practitioners are more likely to have more of an understanding that different bodies are different. And so what's quote unquote normal might still be causing symptoms in a particular body.
Of course.
Which just seems very intuitive to me, but you know.
Oh, who God. You don't have that medical degree, baby. So they're going to let you know. So, yeah.
Clearly, I don't know. But she said, even if that's the case, you know, there's a lot of other testing we could do. Like, for example, I would get you to do blood work at very different times during your cycle so that we can see what's going on at each stage of your cycle and things like that. And that's just kind of a beginning. So I feel really lucky that there's actually a practitioner that I'm feeling good about seeing who takes this seriously. And I said to her, what do you think of the idea, this very controversial idea that periods shouldn't hurt? And she's like, absolutely, periods shouldn't hurt. Like, it's been very normalized. It's not normal. And so if periods are hurting, especially to the point where you're reaching for pain meds consistently, that's not normal. And there's actually treatment for that.
Wow.
Shocking.
Are you for real?
Yeah.
How does it feel to have somebody that's like on your side and is invested in supporting you in this way? Because, you know, one thing I didn't get to ask you is, from age 12, it sounded like you were just excited to be part of the club. And was there a point in time on that journey up until now where you like resented your period or felt like, how has that feeling of your period changed given how much pain it's causing you? That's probably a loaded question because I'm expecting something, but I'm just really curious.
Yeah. Well, increasingly, I mean, it's just something to kind of dread.
Yeah.
And yeah. So, I definitely resented it a lot. And how did it feel? Like, I started crying because I was just like, oh my God, this is somebody who actually cares about the excruciating and debilitating pain that I'm in on a regular basis. And I'm just so used to not, you know, being cared for in that way, not having, you know, doctors care. And just sort of having to live with it and not having really anything that helps or that helps enough. So that felt, incredible. And I cried, and I will probably keep crying about it. But that's why, I mean, for this episode, like for the BIPOC of the week, it isn't any one person, because it is so difficult for people who suffer with their periods to get any care. And I think especially for women of color, because as well as trans folks and non-binary folks, all of those like marginalized gender identities, our pain is really not taken seriously by practitioners so often. And then, you know, Black women in particular, there's like all these studies about doctors perceiving Black people in general, I think, and Black women in particular as not like not feeling as much pain or not being in as much pain as they're actually in. And it's, you know, it's absolutely horrifying. And it means that we don't actually get the care that we need. And if you also, you know, look at like endometriosis hashtags on social media and stuff like that, it's largely white people. And there's actually been some data showing that people perceive endometriosis as being primarily a white woman's disease, which also that kind of bias also affects medical professionals and also leads to them not thinking about that as much with people from marginalized, you know, racial and gender identities. So it's so often just been BIPOC who menstruate who have had to look out for each other and tell each other. You know, it was one of my friends who, you know, a couple of months ago said to me, like, periods aren't supposed to hurt. And I laughed and she was like, I'm serious. Like, if your doctor's not taking you seriously, then get another doctor. Like, that's, you're not supposed to be in this much pain. And it really, like, emboldened me to feel like I didn't have to just, like, accept what I was being given. So I just feel so grateful to all of the BIPOC on social media and just in each other's lives who are educating each other and spreading the word that we actually don't have to live like this.
Yeah. Wow. That's so powerful. That's honestly like when you were talking about the ways that like endometriosis is being sort of like understood as like a potentially quote unquote white woman's like disease, I think that just is so telling of how, like you said before, like the pain, the suffering that is just inherently put on BIPOC, so much so that maybe BIPOC aren't necessarily feeling like we can show up and have and take up space in these conversations about endometriosis, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's such a powerful thing to be like supported by folks to tell you. And I honestly, like you said this before in preparation for this episode, that like, you know, periods aren't supposed to hurt. And I too wanted, I was like, girl, what are you talking about? That's how they go. Like, what do you mean? You know? And I have to recognize that even for me, my relationship with my period, how it's changed now, I see it as something that's like precious because I want to be able to like give birth one day. And like this idea of periods being something that is either, you know, we're supposed to love them or we're supposed they're horrible and we have to banish them and there's something that's taboo. Like, to me, I think that what this episode reminds me of is that we need to have just a lot more conversations about the things that our bodies do all the time without us even thinking about them. Like, that's the shit that wilds me out about periods, is that like somewhere some pituitary gland is getting a signal to do a thing and then something else is doing whatever and then it drops and the beat drops. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if there's something about that that's like mystical and interesting, but also it can be so horrible for folks, and it's not supposed to be so horrible for folks. And so I'm really appreciative and grateful for us having this conversation because I'm also learning a lot. And I'm also learning about like the ways that perhaps like even my period will continue to change. And so like this is like the door that's open for us to continue having that conversation. So I just want to thank you.
Yeah. And I want to thank you for showing up to this conversation and sharing. And I always love seeing like, you know, how oftentimes our experiences are so opposite or just like flipped. And then we find the points that we can relate. And I mean, we always just hold so much space for each other. I'm always so grateful for the space that you hold for me. And it's so funny. I've been menstruating for, I guess, you know, not to give away my age, but not, I don't care about that, 22 years. And
22, baby. Woo.
Yeah. And
when's her birthday? When is her birthday?
Oh, yeah. May or June. I can't remember exactly what. But yeah. But anyways, it's been that many years, but I'm like, I feel like I'm at the very beginning of a journey because it's like the beginning of treating the pain around it.
Wow.
In a real way, not just kind of in a like band-aid hope this like gets me through, you know, the next couple hours kind of way. So hopefully we can have a lot more conversations about this.
Yes, please. Hey everyone, it's Nick.
And Lala.
If you've been listening to Scene and you like what you hear,
please share us with your friends.
Subscribe to the podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at Scene the Podcast.
Write a review and just tell us what you think.
And help make this work sustainable by supporting Scene the Podcast on Patreon.
We need our beautiful community and we cannot do this without you.